This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. When Chinese President Hu Jintao visits the United States this week, one of his first orders of business is to go to a banquet at the home of Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, outside Seattle. President Hu will also tour the Boeing plant in Everett, Washington. China just placed a tentative order for 80 Boeing jets. And then he goes to the White House to meet with President Bush. To learn more about the Chinese president, and we promise to avoid trotting out the query, who is who, we're joined by Kenneth Lieberthal. He is professor of political science at the University of Michigan, and he was senior director for Asia on the National Security Council in the Clinton administration. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Hu Jintao became president in 2003, and I've seen him referred to as a cipher. How would you describe his leadership style?
Well, he is someone who likes to keep his personal views very much to himself. So he is not someone who reveals a lot about his own personality and generally does not tell you what really troubles him personally.
And back in China, how much would be known about him? It doesn't sound like this was a guy who's cultivated a cult of personality.
Exactly the opposite. He's someone who has sought to be the ultimate disciplined collective leader, someone who helps provide direction, but really never tries to distinguish himself from his own colleagues.
He's 63 years old now, and I was interested to read that he had spent many years as party chief in rural, poor provinces in China. Is that an unusual thing, and does it shape his leadership now as president, do you think?
Well, it is an unusual thing for the last 20 years or so. His predecessor, Jiang Zemin, was from Shanghai. Zhu Rongji, who was Jiang's prime minister, also has spent much of his career in Shanghai and in the eastern part of China. So moving to Hu Jintao is really moving back to China's heartland. He not only spent a lot of his career in the interior, he spent it in some of the poorest provinces of the interior, dramatically different places from the coastal megalopolises that most foreigners see when they now visit China. He is seeking in a variety of ways to raise standards of living in the countryside, to balance the growth of interior provinces with that of the coast so that the gap between the two does not continue to widen at a very rapid clip, to improve China's social safety net, and especially to take care of migrants who have entered China's cities. So he really is trying to use some of his ability to just simply shift the substance of policy so that while he maintains a rapid rate of growth for the economy as a whole, a little bit more of that will be used to take the edge off of the social tensions that result.
I want to ask you about an earlier chapter in Hu Jintao's leadership. He was party chief in Tibet during a crackdown there in 1989. There was a group of monks leading a protest. Police fired on protesters, and 70 Tibetans were killed. What was his role during that crackdown?
Well, he was the party secretary for Tibet. In other words, he was the number one political leader for what the Chinese call the Tibet Autonomous Region. So he was responsible for that crackdown. I have no doubt at all that he personally supported it and issued the orders that enabled it to take place the way it took place.
Hu Jintao became president right around the time of the SARS outbreak in China and the cover-up. How did he handle that, and what was the effect of that, do you think?
Well, you know, the Chinese system is one that automatically leans in the direction of covering up bad news. And that's the way the Chinese reacted initially when the first inklings of SARS began to become clear. As SARS spread, as it moved to Hong Kong, international pressure grew. The Chinese leadership split on how they ought to handle this. Jiang Zemin, the former president, continued to insist that they handle it in the traditional way. Hu Jintao, who had just taken over as president of China, argued that instead they needed to become open, transparent. They had to make some people assume responsibility personally. So he fired the Minister of Health, fired another person who headed Beijing Municipality. This proved to be very important politically for Hu Jintao. He's not someone who normally would have moved rapidly to put himself out in front in a very public way.
You're talking about this notion of openness and transparency that you say he's brought. How do you square that with the censorship that we're seeing in China now? Websites blocked, journalists arrested, imprisoned, a crackdown, it seems.
I think that Hu Jintao would not have trouble squaring it, although certainly in the West we think of these things as contradictory. He believes very strongly that the fundamental requirement for handling China's problems of poverty, for handling the problems of environmental degradation, for maintaining economic growth and for managing China's increasing role in the international arena is to maintain social stability during a period of enormous social strain in the country. So he, on the one side, is prepared to promote the notion that the government is very attentive to the needs of people in a period of great difficulty, and that the government is transparent on those things where it needs to be transparent to the people, so that people feel more comfortable with it. While on the other hand, cracking down hard on things that he feels put at risk the capacity to maintain social stability. So while there is an enormous amount of criticism of the government and that kind of thing in China openly, if people cross a line in publications, in the broadcast media, even now we're beginning to find blogging on the internet, Hu Jintao doesn't hesitate to use very tough tactics to put a stop to that.
You know, Professor Lieberthal, we've talked about Hu Jintao's policy and his background, and we've omitted what may be the more interesting parts of his personality, which are apparently some skill at ballroom dancing and, I've read, a photographic memory. Is that true?
Well, I've never danced with him, but I have seen his photographic memory. He typically sits through meetings without referring to notes. If you made a recording of what he said and then typed a transcript of that recording, it would come out in perfect sentences, not a missed word anywhere. So he clearly has a tremendous ability to be, first of all, thoroughly briefed on any topic. He obviously is very, very deeply informed. Secondly, a highly organized mind. And thirdly, he certainly doesn't get nervous or you know, lose his ability to articulate his thoughts clearly when he's talking to high-level leaders or to large groups in public.
Kenneth Lieberthal, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Kenneth Lieberthal teaches Chinese politics at the University of Michigan. He was senior director for Asia on the National Security Council during the Clinton administration.